We're continuing our lessons from the early church. Today, the message is entitled, A Visit to Antioch of Pisidia. There's a story of a man. Oh, sorry. This is from Janet. She loves my story. She goes to the end. Well, she's gone out of business. There was a man sitting in a neighborhood bar, simply staring intently at the drink on the counter that was in front of him. And he sat there for over half an hour. Suddenly, a big trouble-making biker stepped up beside him, grabbed his drink, and gulps it down in one swig. And the poor man begins to cry. Come on, man, I'm just giving you a hard time, said the biker. I didn't think you'd cry. I can't stand to see a man cry. Between sobs, the first man said, This is the worst day of my life. I can't do anything right. I overslept and was late for an important meeting, so my boss fired me. When I went to the parking lot, I found that my car had been stolen and I don't have insurance. I left my wallet in the cab that I was taking home, where I found my wife in bed with the gardener and my own dog bit me. So I came to this bar trying to work up enough courage to put an end to my life, and then you show up and drink down the poison. Janet liked that story very much. Have you ever had a bad day? Of course you have a bad day. We've all had it. Maybe you're having it now, I don't know. But always remember, it could be worse for you. I hope I can say this man's right. This is a true story. An Iraqi terrorist named Kay Ramajet didn't pay enough postage on his letter bomb. It comes back to him with a return to sender stamped on the box, and he forgot that it was a bomb, and he opened it and it blew up. That's a bad day. Or have you heard, this is a true story, a very interesting story, that after the Exxon Valdez oil disaster, do you remember that up in Alaska? To rehabilitate just one seal after that disaster was $80,000 to rehabilitate. They had a special ceremony one day where two of the most expensively saved animals in the history of the world were released into the wild, amid cheers and applause from all the people who gathered to look on. 1 minute later, full view of everyone, a killer whale came up and ate them both. So I ask you again, have you ever had a bad day? What's the answer to a bad day? Proverbs 15:13 reads this way, it's an interesting verse. Bright eyes gladden the heart, the good news puts fat on the bones. Now, please don't take this word fat literally. What the writer is saying is that good news gives you an emotional prosperity. It makes your heart feel lighter, your day more bearable. The word that describes fat is encouragement. Chuck Swindoll is right when he states that many Christians are dying for a lack of encouragement. In other words, without encouragement, we become diminished in our ability to thrive and to grow and to minister. When we're discouraged, all kinds of negative things happen to us. And the longer that discouragement persists in us, the more desperate for relief we become. When we're discouraged, we make rash decisions that seem like they're going to help us, only to discover that it's just created a whole raft of new problems. In a state of discouragement, we run away from someone or something. In discouragement, we end up blaming someone else for our despair. In discouragement, our relationships suffer, our work suffers, and yes, our faith suffers. It's no wonder that when the one thing we long for from other people is encouragement, and we don't get it, that we feel betrayed. So there's no surprise, I think, that when Paul sets out on his very first out of Pisidia in what is now part of Turkey, what's the first thing the synagogue leaders ask for him? Verse 15 reads, "Brother, if you have any word of encouragement for us, please come and give it." I know it's exhortation in the version of it, but the word is encouragement used here. Any word of encouragement for us, give it to us. When Paul and Barnabas arrived in Antioch for the very first time, it would appear that there were no Christians present. Instead, the two missionaries did what they normally do in this situation. They headed directly to a synagogue to share the salvation story of God's deliverance of Israel and his gift of Christ Jesus. Now you might wonder why Paul and Barnabas would even make the effort to go to Antioch. They first had to travel by boat 150 miles, disembarking in Perga. They did not remain in Perga, but headed immediately to Antioch, traveling by foot over land. It was not an easy journey for them. To reach Antioch, the two men would have to navigate the hills that surrounded Antioch, and these hills were notorious for bands of bandits going around robbing people. However, they arrived safely to meet a group of devout Jews who were essentially cut off from Jerusalem. But God's hand is in everything, and God is clearly at work here. Antioch was not a major Jewish worship center, but it was a strategic place from which to spread the gospel. Antioch was located on major trade routes that went east and west, as well as north and south. It was in Antioch where there was also a Roman garrison that controlled the whole southern region of that area. So if the gospel took hold in Antioch, it would surely spread to other locations, especially among the Gentile converts. However, let's go back to our friends in the synagogue for a moment. Again, this was a Jewish community that was very isolated. There was a lot of discouragement here. Likely because they are surrounded in Antioch by a non-believing population of Gentiles. They had likely never heard from a new teacher or rabbi in a very long time. News of recent events in Jerusalem about Jesus in particular would not likely have reached them. So Paul, when he arrives, he's seen as a very devout Pharisee. And this was not an opportunity to be missed for them. "Give us some encouragement," they said. "Give us some hope." Never won before an opportunity. Paul, whose name is actually changed in this city from Saul to Paul, rises up in a very detailed fashion, which I read for you today, lays out the salvation story of Israel. That was a very familiar story to those who were present in that synagogue. But suddenly, Paul adds a whole new chapter to that story. He goes on to tell them about Jesus' death and resurrection, demonstrating from the scriptures that Jesus was the fulfillment of God's promises. Now, this may surprise you to learn that Paul actually received a very warm reception in this synagogue. They liked it. The message about Jesus was new, it was exciting, it was different, and although they did not immediately embrace Jesus as the Messiah, they did follow Paul and Barnabas out from the synagogue and ask them, pleaded with them, to come back and tell them some more. They were hungry for it. Paul's message was one of hope, and they were hungry, they were desperate. But they were also selfish with that message. If you read on in the book of Acts, about a week later, Paul has opportunity to preach to the whole city of Antioch, including all the Gentiles who were listening. And the Jewish leaders got jealous. They thought this message of encouragement was for them alone. So the Jewish leaders started slandering Paul and Barnabas and argued against everything that they said. Not because they disputed the message, but because they were jealous. Then Paul said that he had simply followed God's instruction to share the good news with the Jews first, and then with the Gentiles. And that's what it says in Isaiah 49, verse 7. The Jews were enraged. They actually started a riot, which forced the two men to leave the city of Antioch. And on their way out, they actually shook the dust from their feet like the Lord had commanded his disciples to do. Do you remember that? Now, we could argue that the effort in Antioch was a failure. But the church actually did get started there, because Paul ends up returning twice more to the city of Antioch, once on each of his missionary journeys. Paul never gave up trying to reach the people of Antioch. And eventually, their need for hope overcame their jealousy. Perhaps the greatest lesson to come out of Antioch is a recognition that what people need and what people long for is encouragement. Notice the leaders of the synagogue did not say to Paul, "Hey, Paul, give us some more theological insight." Their souls didn't want more debates, more education. They want hope. Without hope, people perish, Ezekiel says, or as I stated later, we wither on the vine. People who are discouraged are still breathing, but boy, there's not a lot of life left in them. I'm beginning to see in this passage the vital work of encouragement. When I think about Jesus and the people that he encountered in his ministry, I see that among the healing and all the teaching, all of them wanted encouragement. Zacchaeus was a despised man by his fellow Jews. He was an outcast. He longed to hear from Jesus that he too was the son of Abraham. The woman at the well in John 4, who had been forced from one man to another, longs to know that there's a spring that never goes dry. 10 lepers standing at a distance long to know that their remaining days could be more than just misery and isolation. A condemned thief hanging on a cross beside Jesus longs to know that there's something beyond this world. Every man, woman, and child on this planet is longing for some encouragement. As a church, one of our vital missions is to encourage or to build each other. As Paul says in 1 Corinthians 12, our gifts are given to us to help, to encourage, or build up the entire church. Sadly, many of us do not see the importance of a ministry of encouragement. We can be somewhat blind to the needs of our brothers and sisters who are sitting in the pew, well, maybe not today beside us, but maybe behind us or in front. We sometimes can't or don't want to see behind the facade that we like to project to each other. Story goes that there was one day a diver who was enjoying the aquatic world 20 feet below sea level. He was enjoying all the sea life when he noticed another man in the same depth, but this guy had no scuba gear at all. The diver went over another 20 feet and soon the other man came and joined him at the same depth. The diver went another few feet and sure enough, the other man soon came down to meet him. The confused diver, he took out a waterproof chalkboard and set to write, "How in the world are you able to stay, or able to stay under this depth without equipment?" The guy took the chalkboard and erased what the director had written and said, "I'm drowning, you moron." How in the world can we be so oblivious to the pain of others and the vital needs of others when we ourselves intimately know struggles. Perhaps like the Jews in the synagogue were blinded by jealousy. We are jealous of those who receive the attention that we so sorely desire. Perhaps we see those who seek help as being weak. Perhaps we just do not think it is our problem, so we can simply ignore the suffering of others. It may also be that we are just not attentive enough to the words and the expressions of others. When someone has a physical issue, we are really quick to recognize their need for help, aren't we? But maybe we're not so savvy when it comes to the inner needs of other people. That's one of the reasons why the Bell Canada program, Let's Talk, is got such attraction to people. This is an annual program, I'm sure you've all heard about it, where people are encouraged to talk about mental health issues. The big athlete, Claire Hughes, used to be the face of that program. Our human need for conversation, and particularly our need for encouragement, is growing at an exponential rate. It's growing very quickly. More and more experts are sounding the alarm that our digital world is not connecting people. Rather, it is separating. The majority of human communication today is nonverbal. We cannot truly or fully communicate with someone via text message or tweeting, even Zoom. We may be sharing information, but we're not sharing ourselves. Despite Mark Zuckerberg's intention, friendships are not built or maintained on Facebook. Our society as a whole is becoming less and less skilled at just talking about the issues of our hearts. To text someone that you're having a bad day is nowhere near as intimate as sitting across from each other in a coffee shop and talking about it. A hug is always better than a word comment. I am with our Jewish friends in the synagogue in Antioch. Brothers and sisters, if you have any word of encouragement for us, come and give it. How often have we sat in a church meeting and we wanted to scream out that kind of request? Give me some encouragement. How often have we been either in a hospital bed or next to a hospital bed or visiting someone in jail or a senior's residence or a single parent home, or even our own places where we work and we live, and we just ache for a word of encouragement? How many husbands or wives have been silently withering away inside because they yearn to know that they are cherished, that their value extends beyond their daily chores or the paycheck? How many children long for a parent or a grandparent or a teacher or coach to express appreciation for simply who they are? How long has it been since we felt joy and hope in the abundant life? I will bet the farm that most people in this room would turn all the church programs in every church on this planet to receive regularly a dose of encouragement. So now the question becomes, what do I do if I'm lacking a sense of encouragement? You may not like the answer, but I think I'm onto something. Remember, Paul was not alone in Antioch, was he? He traveled with someone else. His name was Barnabas, which means son of encouragement. He's popping up a lot, isn't he, in our journeys? Now, we haven't mentioned it today, but Barnabas is the clue to solving the question of encouragement. I think Barnabas represents a fundamental truth in our Christian lives. If you want encouragement, the best way to get it is to be a person who encourages others. If you want more hope in your life, then perhaps you need to dispense more hope to others. We need to become sons and daughters of encouragement. Maybe we need to see things the way Bruce Larson does in his book, Ask Me to Dance. These are his words that are quite interesting. You ever feel like a frog? Frogs feel slow and low and ugly and puffy, drooped and pooped. I know. One told me. A frog feeling comes when you want to feel bright, but you feel dumb. When you want to share, but you are selfish. When you want to be thankful, but you are resentful. You want to be great, but you are small. When you want to care, but you are indifferent. Yes, at one time or another, each of us has found himself or herself on a lily pad, floating down the great river of life, frightened and disgusted, and were too froggish to budge. Once upon a time, there was a frog. Only he wasn't really a frog. He was a prince who looked like a frog. The wicked witch had cast a spell on him, and only the kiss of a beautiful maiden could save him. But since when do cute chicks kiss frogs? So there he sat, an unkissed prince in a frog form. One day, a beautiful maiden gathered him up and gave him a big smack. Zap! There he was, a frog turned a handsome prince. And the story says they lived happily ever after, doesn't it? So, what's the task of a Christian? Kissing frogs, of course. Now, I might rephrase that line a little bit. What's the task of a Christian? Why? It's transforming each other with encouragement. And boy, we need encouragement today.